Good morning. Today's Daf Moikan is your test. We're on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We are the two Mishnayos over here. We're in the top Mishnah, about 6-7 lines down from the top of the Amud. So the Mishnah is going to continue with Hilchos Chol HaMoed. Now, as I mentioned already numerous times, so in this parak, the third parak of Moikan, so we're going to be transitioning from the halachas of Chol HaMoed to that of Avelus. We have already talked about intersections, what happens when the two of them intersect with one another. But in the course of today's Daf, so we're going to be making the full transition, not now. A little bit later this morning, we're going to be making a full transition and going totally into the halachas of Avelus. So that you'll, when we get to that point, I'll signal and then you'll know that we're going to be making that big transition. But in the meantime, however, so we're still dealing with what the cans and cannot, the do's and don'ts of Chol HaMoed. And so this mission now is going to continue on the malacha of Ksiva. So what can you write on Chol HaMoed? What can you not write on Chol HaMoed? So the mission says Ve'ela Kosvim Memoed. So these are the things that one is allowed to write on Chol HaMoed, Kedushin Nashim, Vigitin. So if it is Kedushin Nashim, if you want to write a Get Kedushin, now the word Get Kedushin is confusing, so let me use different language. The word Get just simply means a contract, but generally speaking, we assume with the word, we associate the word Get with divorce, so I will try to be a little bit clearer. So when we talk about Kedushin Nashim, we're talking about the Shtar Kedushin. So Shtar Kedushin, you're Mekadosh a woman with a Shtar, and the answer, of course, is yes. The opening mission of Kedushin is that Begimel Drachim, that in three different ways, a man can be Mekadosh a woman, and one of them is with a shtar. So if a man wants to be Mekadosh a woman with a shtar, and he needs it written up on Chol HaMoed, so you could do so. Obviously, the Mishnah also describes Gittin as well. So if a get is needed to be written, so it could be done in Chol HaMoed as well. Vishovrim, if you want to write a receipt, Daitike Rashi explains over here as being instructions for last will and testament, matana, any kind of gift, or prusbolin, or if you want to write up a prusbol, I'll come back and explain that in just a moment. Igor shum v'igros mazon, if you want to write an appraisal, you have to appraise let's say for example, you want to appraise an estate, or igros mazon, or let's say support. In other words, you are committing yourself to some sort of child support, and you want to write it up, so you can do that in Chol HaMoed as well. Shtari Chalitza Miunin, if you want to write up a document for either Chalitza or Miun, Chalitza, if the brother-in-law elects not to do the mitzvah of Yibam, so he can do the procedure of Chalitza, there is a document written up for that as well. Miun, if a woman refuses her husband. When we get to Yevamos, we're going to discuss exactly under what circumstances a woman could refuse her husband. It's like an annulment, but not exactly, And Yevamos, we'll discuss this in much better detail. So, v'shtari birin. Also, shtari birin. The way Rashi understands shtari birin is that basically any judgments that are made over the course of Chol HaMoed, so they could be written up as well. Gzeros basin v'igro shel rishus. So, the last two things mentioned that one is allowed to write is gzeros basin, a decree enacted by a basin, right, a general decree. Or shavushus, or if something something is associated with the government, so that could also be written up as well, if necessary, on Chol HaMoed. Okay, the one thing which we really discuss in any kind of detail is prusbol. So the prusbol could also be written up on Chol HaMoed. What is a prusbol? So we know. So the prusbol is a document that's going to override Shemitah. So it happens to be that we're currently right now in the Shemitah year. So at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, so all loans are going to be forgiven. So the construct of Shemitah is that at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, so any debt that is owed to you, so is going to be forgiven, canceled. So going to the Gemara in Gittin and Daf Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, and a number of other Gemaras throughout Shas, and the Mishnah in Shvi'is also discusses this as well. In the latter Prakim, so we know that the Chachamim create an institution in which you could write up a document, and that document is going to serve to override the forgiveness of the loan. That document is called the prusbol. And that could be written even during Chol HaMoed. Just think about it for a moment. It's a little bit difficult in that exactly. So when are these loans forgiven? The loans are forgiven at the end of the Shemitah year. The truth of the matter is that there is a shita that says that they're forgiven at the beginning of the Shemitah year, but the accepted halacha is at the end of the Shemitah year. So which Chol HaMoed are we talking about? If we're talking about Chol HaMoed Sukkos, it's way too late. Meaning, right, the loan has already been forgiven by Rosh Hashanah. At the entrance of Rosh Hashanah, just 2 weeks earlier, so already the loans have been forgiven. So we're writing a prusbol on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. That's difficult. But even if I say it's Chol HaMoed Pesach, that's also difficult. because there's still another 5.5 months remaining until the forgiveness of the loan. Okay, so, right, the Gemara doesn't discuss this. It's not brought up in the Gemara, but what I would imagine, I'd venture a guess, and suggest is that maybe this is going to be our last opportunity, meaning we know that the borrower is going to go away or the lender is going to go away, and this is going to be one of our last opportunities, even though the forgiveness of the loan is not going to be for another 5.5 months. Okay.
What can't you write?
So what you can write seemingly is greetings. In other words, if you want any kind of correspondence with somebody that doesn't have a mitzvah attached to it or associated with it, so presumably you can't write that. Yeah, Danny?
You can't write a check.
Right. So the Shah Kedushin. So that's a good question, but that the Gemara is going to discuss. So that we can just go right to the Gemara. So Amar Shmuel Motor La'Areis Isha B'Cholosh Moed Shemi Kadmenu Acher. Okay. So you're allowed to be do Erisin. So as we've discussed already numerous times, and as we are approaching Seder Nashim, so this is the basics that we all need to know, and that is that there are two stages of marriage. The first stage of marriage is Erisin. It also synonymous with the term Kedushin. That's the first stage of marriage. It's not engagement. Engagement is a poor way to describe it because engagement nowadays just simply means that we're committing to each other, that we're going to get married. But the engagement itself, as we use in today's language, it does not mean any kind of formal marriage one to another. It just simply means that we're committing each other. We're engaged, as the word itself would indicate. But rather, in terms of marriage, the actual institution of marriage itself, so it is accomplished in two steps. The first step is either called Erisin or it's called Kedushin. The Masechta itself is called Kedushin. The second stage of marriage is Nisuin. And as we get closer to Seder Nashim, we'll discuss this in more detail. But in the meantime, however, we're talking about Erisin over here, which is the first stage of marriage. And Shmuel says that Mutar La'Aris Isha B'Chol Shel Moed, that one is allowed to be Ma'aris. You're allowed to go through the first stage of marriage on Chol HaMoed. Now, earlier in the Masechta, as Danny reminds us, so we learned together that you're not allowed to get married on Chol HaMoed. That's the second stage of marriage. So, and the reason why is because in Marvin Simcha B'Simcha, the Gemara gave a host of other reasons as well, four in total, if I remember correctly. Anyway, but our Gemara over here says that Erisin is going to be allowed. Why? Because Shemi Kadmenu Acher. Because what may end up happening is that, look, in the pool of men and women and the fact that right now she's eligible and available, and if I don't take advantage right now, somebody else is going to take advantage of the situation. So therefore, it gives me the right to go ahead and to be ma'ariser on Chol HaMoed. Because if I don't, someone's going to step in. Now, lema misayele, the Gemara says, good. So that seems to be a really straightforward halacha by Shmuel. Not only straightforward halacha, but supported by our Mishnah. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Ve'elu kosvim b'moed kedushe nashim. So my love, shari kedushim, mamish. So, right, and I know I said that as a pshat in the Mishnah, but the Gemara is assuming right now that that's a simple pshat in the Mishnah. Lo, shtari psikta. So the Gemara says, no, it's not necessarily talking about shtari kedushin. It could be talking about shtari psikta. What is shtari psikta? So it's what you and I call tanaim. So if you got into a chasna, so you know that at the chasna there is tanaim. Now, nowadays, tanaim, so it's a ceremonial, it's a formality. It doesn't have what it used to have back in the good old days. Back in the good old days, for many, many generations, for many years, going back to the Gemara, so what they would do, the parents of the chasan and the parents of the gala, is that they would get together and make financial arrangements. Meaning, here's the young couple getting married, and what is he coming into the marriage with? Or right now, whatever, wherever they're holding in life. In other words, they're going to need help and support from the parents. I know it doesn't always happen, but in other words, we're talking about where there are parents who are ready and prepared to provide support. Well, how much support? So back in the good old days, so this was actually drafted as a document where both sides of the parents, both sides, chasan and kala, parents-wise, are going to commit themselves in writing how much they're ready to support this young chasan and kala. And this is what's called shtar psikta. Nowadays, we formally call it tanaim, but nowadays, it's not, Right, it's ceremonial. It's just a draft. There's no real dollar figure that is included in the tanaim that's done nowadays. Okay, they do it. They still do it. You're not speaking to the right person. I don't know. Okay, so the Kedrav Gidol Amarav Damarav Gidol Amarav. So kamata nosin levincha, kamata nosin lebitcha, kach vekach ham devikitshu, hein hein advar maniknim be'amira. Sorry. So the Gemara says that's the sharp sikta. That's again, it's what we call tanayim. So it's everybody's commitment to what they're going to be offering into the marriage. That's what the Mishnah is talking about. Now, we're not saying we know for sure that's what the Mishnah is talking about, but that's what the Mishnah could be talking about. And so therefore, the Mishnah is not providing an ironclad raya for Shmuel. Meaning Shmuel obviously insists that you can do Erisin during Chol HaMoed, and obviously write it up through a contract if necessary. But that's not necessarily what the Mishnah is describing. We continue. Leim Misayela, the Gemara says, okay. So our Mishnah is not necessarily proof positive to Shmuel, but how about the following? And that is a Mishnah that we learned earlier. Ein osim nashim emoid. Lo besulos v'lo amanos v'lo miyavnim imnei shisim chihilo. So we go back to a Mishnah that we saw already earlier in the Masechta, Daf Chesamud Beis, and the Mishnah over there says he can't get married on Chol HaMoed. Now marriage over there means stage two. It means nisuin. Now what we could do in that Mishnah is make a really simple diuk. So hala arei sharei. So, okay. So it means that you can't do the second stage of marriage, but presumably what the Mishnah is telling us is that I could do the first stage of marriage. That's the deductive reasoning of the Mishnah. So lo mi bai kamar. The Gemara says not necessarily. So lo mi bai ela ares lo kavin mitzvah. So the Gemara says no, maybe no. Maybe the correct way to learn the Mishnah is that I can't do erusin, I can't do nisuin. Period. The Mishnah is only talking about nisuin. Erusin, it's a given. I can't do erusin. Why? Because erusin is not a mitzvah. Ela afilu lisa nami deka'avin mitzvah aser. But what the Mishnah is telling me is that even nisuin, which in of itself is a mitzvah, that also you cannot do on Chol HaMoed. Maybe that's the way to understand the Mishnah. Erusin is not a mitzvah. So that, yeah, it's a funny statement of the Gemara, but in the context, it's well understood. Meaning there is a machlokas rishonim between the Rambam and the Rush, whether or not the act of getting married in of itself is a mitzvah, or that's the shitas of the Rambam. Alternatively, the marriage itself is not a mitzvah, but it's a hechitimtza. It's the hechsher mitzvah that allows for what mitzvah of the Torah? The very first mitzvah of the Torah, the mitzvah of peruvu. So it's a machlokas that we shown him. But either way, you side on that machlokas. I could learn the Gemara over here. Meaning that according to the Rambam, what's a mitzvah? So erusin is just simply the first stage of the marriage. So yes, of course, it's a hechsher mitzvah, but it's not the actual mitzvah itself. The mitzvah itself is the second stage of marriage, when the couple now are fully married. Now, by the way, just to be clear, the first stage of marriage, erusin, that's marriage. Meaning, if they want to separate at that point in time, they're going to need a get. And whatever. I just don't want to go through all the details right now, but I just want everyone to have a full understanding that that first stage of marriage is, in fact, marriage. It just happens to be that vis-a-vis the mitzvah, per se, the mitzvah is only at its conclusion. The conclusion is at the second stage of marriage. That's how you would learn it like the Rambam. For the Rush, it's even easier to say the Gemara. Because the Rush says that what is marriage? Marriage in of itself is not a mitzvah, but it's a hechitimsa for peruvu. But the couple is not intimate until the second stage of marriage. So that means to say that erusin, again, it's a hechsher mitzvah. You can't get to the second stage of marriage without the first stage of marriage, but it's not the mitzvah per se. The mitzvah per se is to get to the second stage of marriage so that you can get involved in the mitzvah peruvu. Okay, anyway. So what comes out over here is that we at this point in time don't have a glot raya for the sheet of Shmuel that you could do erusin on Chol HaMoed. Tashma, the Gemara is now going to try its third attempt based on a brisa. The Tana Debei Shmuel, Marasin Avalo Konsin. So you could do erusin. You can't do the second stage of marriage. Einosin Seudas Erusin. Now you can't make a Seudas Erusin. So that's too much simcha over the course of Chol HaMoed, and that's an eruv of simcha and simcha. That's mixing two simchas together. You can't do yibam because simcha yilam. So anyway, shmaminam. Okay. So the third try was a charm. This brisa here says it really clearly that you can in fact do erusin on Chol HaMoed. We do have in fact have a raya, a strong raya for Shmuel. Umi amar Shmuel shemikan menu acher. Now what was the svar behind Shmuel? Why can I do erusin during? Why can I do erusin during Chol HaMoed? So he says, because I'm worried about somebody else stepping in. To which the Gemara now says, really, you're worried about somebody else stepping in? Is that even a thing? So, v'ha amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel, b'chol yom v'yom bas kol yotzeis, v'omeres bas ploni leploni. Stay ploni leploni. So the Gemara says, what about this idea of Besheret? So, by the way, Beshert not only applies to Shiduchim, it also applies to properties as well. Okay, properties also, you have a Beshert property. Okay, we run the risk of objectifying, and not gonna do that. But at the same time, however, there's an idea of Beshert as it relates to Shiduchim. It's an idea of Beshert as it relates to property. Anyway, and the Basco comes out and says that that woman's going to be for you. How can the Basco come out and say that woman's for you, and then someone else is going to step in? How's that going to happen? So the Gemara says, Ela shema yikadmenu acha berachamim. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to say now a slightly different pshat, a modified pshat in our understanding. Meaning, if she's your Beshert, you're going to be marrying her, and it doesn't matter if you get engaged in Chol HaMoed, or, and again, I don't want to use the word engaged. It doesn't matter if you're going to do Erusin and Chol HaMoed, if you wait a week and do it after Chol HaMoed. So then, what are we worried about? Meaning, if she is going to be locked into you, min hashamayim, so what is the concern? So the Gemara says that the concern is that someone else is going to be davening. Now here, I've been saying pshat in the Gemara wrong for a really long time. So now I do have the opportunity, I don't know why I have to admit this publicly, but I now do have the opportunity to say what I think now is really the correct pshat in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, what does that mean, someone is going to daven? So for years I thought it means that he's going to daven and he's going to change Beshertim. That's what I used to think the pshat is. That's not the pshat. At least that's not the simple pshat of the Gemara. Ki ha derava, shamelu gavra debay rachame. So Rava heard somebody davening. And here's how his tefillah went. V'amar tis davenli panisa. So he's looking, there's a girl that he had in mind, right? Specific girl that he had, that he set his eyes on. And that was her. And he davened. So Amar lei, so Rava said to that person, lo ti by rachme hachme, ichaz yalach, lo azaminach, and v'ilo, so kafart b'Hashem. So Rava says, this is not something you should be davening for. This is what's called a tefillah shav. It's a waste of your time. And when you're davening for something that's impossible, so that's a tefillah shav. Right, the Gemara in Brachas, at the end of Brachas, talks about this in detail, about when you're davening for something that is simply impossible, so then that's that you're being a kofar b'Hashem. Okay, and over here, Gemara says beferish. If she's your Besheret, that's great, and if not, davening is not going to help. So basar hachi shama dekamar. So this person now took, right, he listened to Rava, and what he did, he changed his tefillah. And this is how his tefillah went. O ihu lemos mikama. Okay, so he was emotional. He was a little love struck, and so he said, look, what I want now is if I'm not going to marry her, I don't want to see her married to another person. So either I die prematurely, she dies prematurely, and that's how his tefillah came out. So Amar le lav amin alach lo tibay ala demil sahachi. So Rava says, I asked you not to daven in any regard on this matter. Anyway, what comes out from the Gemara over here is that Shema Yikadmenu Acha Berachamim, so the way the Gemara seems to present it now, is that somebody's going to be davening. Not that the tefillah is going to change the Beshert, but what the tefillah may in fact include is that a wish, a prayer, that if I'm not going to be able to get her, so then either she dies early, I die early, and so to avoid that, so then allow the Erusin to occur in Chol HaMoed. So what is that going to do? So at least now, hopefully at that point in time, anyone who's davening for a demise, well, once she's already now ureses, so at that point in time, people are going to stop davening. Okay. But what it certainly sounds like from the Gemara, meaning unlike what I've been saying for years, and I'm quite frankly a little bit embarrassed, but it sounds clear from the Gemara is that once you have a Besheret, everyone has. So, but when you have a Besheret, so that's it. Meaning that it's locked at that point in time. Either it's going to happen or it's not going to, or she's not your Besheret. Okay. That's certainly the simple pshat of the Gemara. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Ruvain ben Atstrobili min haTorah umin haNeviim min haKsuvim me Hashem Isha. Okay, so this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu now is providing for you your shidduch, so you can find it in Chumash, in Navi, and in Ksuvim as well, all three. So I'm sorry, me Hashem Isha leIsh. So min haTorah dechziv ayan lavan b'sul v'yomer me Hashem yatsa davar. Okay, so when Eliezer goes and finds the Beshert for Yitzchak. So at that point in time, when he arrives at Lavan, so Lavan realizes, Me Hashem. It comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. We saw Yerushalmi earlier in the Masechta that says that the Chiyuv of Sheva Brachos is being learned from Lavan. So, right, that's a Yerushalmi, it's not the Bavli, but still, comes out that we're learning Halacha from Lavan. Over here, we're learning Hashkafer from Lavan. Okay. It's a really funny place to learn, but Okay, good. So min ha-neviim dechziv ve'avivim olo yadu ki me'ashem hi. Okay, so this is now by Shimshon. So when he finds his Bashert, now, admittedly, by the way, I'm not going to go through the details right now, but his Bashert was an unusual Bashert, but when he found his Bashert, so the Navi says, that's his Bashert, me'ashem. And finally, min ha-ksuvim dechziv beis v'honach la'savos me'ashem asher mashkelas, or mashkelas. Okay. Anyway, the Pasuk in Mishlei, that also speaks to this idea, Umi Hashem Isha Mashkelas, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing a woman for a man. Okay, and then, of course, there's a larger discussion, which I'm not prepared to have, in terms of the balance between, in other words, it's all coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at the same time, however, there has to be some form of Ishtadlus. I remember I don't know where to look it up, but a comment that's associated to the Grub, which is that when it comes to Shiduchim, you put in no hishtadlus. I've heard enough people say it. I think it is properly attributed to the Gra. Anyway, but again, what does that mean? You're not supposed to try. You're not supposed to call shiduchim, shadchanim. Okay, I'm not in the position to say. But from our Gemara over here, it is very clear. The following is very clear, and that is that it's all designed by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, there's always going to be a way in terms of finding your bisharet, but it's all designed by Kadosh Baruch Hu. And once she's a Bashar, that's it. Okay. Amra Mishim Ravu ben Ashrubili ve Amrila ben Masisa Tana. Just a little bit more before we start with the next Mishnah. And that is Amra Ravu ben Ashrubili ein Adam Nechsha Badavar Elaim Kain Aso. So if there is, right, I'm sorry to use a cliche, but if there's smoke, there's fire. And that means to say that if people are saying things about you, it's because they've got to be somewhat true. So v'im lo asa kulo asa miksaso, and even if it's not total truth, but definitely it's a partial truth. V'im lo asa miksaso hira beliba lasoso, and if you didn't do it, you thought about doing it. V'im lo hira beliba lasoso ra'achem shasu v'sameach, or you saw other people do it and you got some sort of vicarious pleasure by watching other people doing it. Okay, so rumors about you. So there is something to it. Let's say it like that. The Gemara says now this second statement by Rav Ruvain ben Atshrubili. So, Mesa Rabbi Yaakov. So the Gemara says, is this really correct? That if people are saying things about you, so there's something to it? So the Gemara says, what about the following? Vayachapu b'nei Yisrael d'var mashir lo kein al Hashem elokeim. So there was a libel. And this is deep into Malachim Beis. So but it was a total libel, meaning that there was simply nothing to it. Hasam lahachisu da'avod. So the Gemara says, no, that was just because of anger. Meaning, if there's kas involved, so then a person can be charged with something that he had absolutely no connection to whatsoever. So Gatashma, the Gemara says, okay, what about the following? Vayikana l'moshe b'machana l'aron kadosh Hashem. Rav Shmo bar Yitzchak Amar melamesh kol echad kinei l'ishto mi Moshe. People in the Midbar warn their wives not to seclude themselves with Moshe. That's what's called kinui. The beginning of Masechta Sota. We talk about what constitutes an official warning in that which, if now the wife is being miyached with that man that she was warned not to be with, so that already now is going to put her in the status of being a Sota. So anyway, but the first step of being a Sota is kinui. It's a warning. And the Gemara says, quite shockingly, that in the Midbar, people warn their wives not to seclude themselves with Moshe. So that means to say that there were now allegations and rumors about Moshe and improprieties. Now, what do you want to tell me? That there was anything to that? That's crazy talk. So Hasam Mishum Sinah Hu Da'avad. So the Gemara says, well, that's Sinah. That there was such hatred that they had towards Moshe. So under those circumstances, so basically, when there's Kas or when there's Sinah, when there's either anger or there's hatred, and the two seem to be very linked to one another. So under those circumstances, a person can be charged with something that he literally has nothing to do with. He wasn't involved with it, not even partially. He wasn't maharer, meaning if there is sinna or kinna involved, or sinna and kas, if there's sinna or kas involved, so then those are going to be exceptions to the rule. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's try this again. I'm Rav Yossi Yael Chalki, im misha choshin osa bedavar ve'ein bo. So I want to have a chelik with anyone who was falsely accused. Now, we just learned together there's no such thing as a false accusation. Although, it's funny, because we also just learned together that there are a couple of exceptions to the rule. But basically, a false accusation, so what Rabbi Yossi says, good. In other words, to suffer the indignity and the embarrassment, So there's a certain amount of schus that you get for being falsely accused. And Rav Papa readily admits that he was falsely accused and he had no part of it. Now again, how does this work with the comment of Rav Ruvain ben Itzchabili, who says that whenever there's an accusation, there's something to the accusation. So lokasha habekala de pasik, habekala de pasik. So the Gemara makes a distinction, and it'll be really hard to put this into practical terms, but it depends on what kind of rumors we're talking about. If we're talking about a rumor that's just simply perpetuating, so under those circumstances, there's something to it. However, kala de pasik, so even after a denial, the rumors still continue. So under those circumstances, then there's something to it. So the Vikala de la Pasik ad kama, the Gemara says, what does that mean? It doesn't stop. So Amar Abai, Amar Li Aim, Dumi Demasa, the Yumo Paga. So people who are walking around with bad reputations, so it goes on, the rumors are circulating for a day and a half. So that is considered now where the rumors are just perpetuating. And under those circumstances, you have to assume that there's something to it. Now, when I say, because I just want to be a little bit careful over here, this is a really sensitive topic. When I say there's something to it, what does that mean? It means that he's guilty. So again, going back to where we started the discussion, but there's something to it. Meaning the Gemara says either he was fully guilty, partially guilty, or the Gemara suggested maybe he had hirurim, or maybe he saw somebody else doing it and he... he aided, abetted, or just simply was happy. So it doesn't mean that he is necessarily a guilty party, but there is something to it. Again, I know that's vague and not perfectly clear, but that's what the Gemara is saying. Right? Where there's smoke, there's fire. That's the cliche, and okay, that's a Gemara over here. Hani mila de lo pasak beni beni. Ava pasak beni beni, le samba. So the Gemara says that when we're talking about rumors, it has to be continuous rumors. Now again, I know these are hard things to formalize and to concretize. What does that mean? There's no break. There's no pause in between. So v'chi pasuk beni beni lo amarna ela de lo pasuk machmas yira ava pasuk machmas yira lo. And the Gemara says and even though we just said that a pause in the middle is going to mean that there's not necessarily smoke to the fire or fire to the smoke, but nevertheless that's only talking about where there was a pause. But it wasn't prompted by fear. If the pause was prompted by fear, meaning that he intimidated people to stop talking, so then then that pause is not significant. Velo amaran ela delo hadar navat. Aval hadar navat. So, velo. So, but if, let's say, the rumors start reissuing, re-sprouting, as Rashi describes it over here, so under those circumstances, those are rumors that you have to you have to be sensitive to. V'lo marnelo delesle oivim, aval isle oivim, oivim hodafku lakala. Now, if you have enemies, so you can ignore all the rumors. Now, it kind of goes back to what the Gemara said earlier, meaning that if there's sinna, or if there's ka, so under those circumstances, rumors can be ignored. Okay. Gemara seems to be repeating a point I made earlier, but okay, that's fine. Okay, adkan, that takes us to the end of that sugya. So basically, we learned so far in today's daf, which is really yesterday's daf, number one, what you're allowed to write up on Chol HaMoed, basically anything associated with a mitzvah. So one is allowed to write up on Chol HaMoed. And on top of that, we learned the heter of Shmuel, that you're allowed to be ma'aris on Chol HaMoed, Shemi Kadmenu. And we learned two statements of Rav Reuven ben Itzchabili. One is that the pshat in Shmuel that we're worried about somebody else davening, does not mean that if somebody else davens, so then they're going to be able to get your Besheret, and that's why you should take advantage of the first opportunity, even if that's Chol HaMoed. That's not the pshat, but rather, Shem Yikadmenu Acher Birachamim. It means that what we're worried about is somebody else davening. And davening meaning that daven that either he should die, the woman should die prematurely. That's the, but in other words, Rav Reuven ben Itzchabili taught us, number one, is that once you have a Besheret, it's Meh Hashem, meaning it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and no one else is going to, is going to step in. And number two, the second thing is that when there's smoke, there's fire. If rumors are circulating about an individual, there's something to the rumors. Now, again, a really delicate issue and one that needs to be treated really carefully. And what exactly the ramifications are of that second idea, I'm not perfectly sure. I'm not comfortable to say what exactly that means practically. But nevertheless, there's something to rumors, And the Gemara then makes a number of qualifications, which rumors are significant, which rumors are insignificant. Okay, we are continuing. We're in the very bottom of Yerches Amad Beis, and we're picking up now the next Mishnah, Ein Kosrin Shtarichov B'moed. So let's say now we're not talking about a mitzvah writing, but we're talking about writing just simply financial. Okay, a loan document. So someone went ahead and borrowed money, and now can you write up a loan document? So the Mishnah says no. Ein Kosrin Shtarichov B'moed. So im eino ma'amino, o she'ein lo, ma she'yochel harizei yichtov. But with two notable exceptions. And number one is that let's say somebody is asking for a loan. There's a mitzvah to lend money to somebody. We just read about it last week's parsha. So but at the same time, however, you're not fully confident that you're going to get paid back by him. So you want to write it up because you're an eino ma'amino. You just simply don't know him. You don't trust him. So that would be one exception. The other exception would be ein lo mashiyochel. He doesn't have anything to eat. Now that he could be making reference to one of two people. Either it could be talking about either the borrower, which quite understandably, meaning if he's borrowing money, so he's right now in a point of desperation for money, or the sofer, right? That's what we said earlier in the Masechta as well. It could be a reference to the sofer where the sofer doesn't have what to eat, and so therefore what you could do is you could provide a parnosa for the sofer during Chol HaMoed if in fact the sofer is really in significant need of money. Ein kosrin sfarim, tefillin mezuzos b'moed, writing up Sifrei Torah, in other words, stam. Writing up Sefer Torah, Tefillah, Mezuzos, Amoid, one is not allowed to do so. The Ein Magian, and one is not allowed to edit, proofread and edit. So, Os Echas, Afilah, B'Sefer Ezra. Even Sefer Ezra. Now, Sefer Ezra does not mean the Navi Ezra, but the way Rashi understands it's the Sefer Torah that was composed by Ezra. What makes that Sefer Torah so special? So, number one, it is the most proofread, perfected Sefer Torah they had during Bais Sheni, it was kept in the Beis HaMikdash. So that is the one that everyone copies from in terms of to get the most authentic and perfected Sefer Torah. So that's Rashi. Rashi does offer another Peshat as well. Anyway, but that's the first Peshat of Rashi. So even that can't be edited. I know, hopefully you're thinking the same thing I'm thinking, which is that if this is the most edited, proofread, in other words, if it is really the template Torah, so then why are we editing it? Okay. I'm not sure what the answer to that would be. If I can suggest, I'm only suggesting, I don't know. Maybe over here, editing does not mean changing it. Maybe just simply means that some of the letters are fading. Okay. That could be the pshat. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kosev Adam Tefillah Mezuzos Le'atzmo. According to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda on Chol HaMoed, you can write Tefillah Mezuzah for your own need, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin and mezuzah. And we turn to the top of your testament aleph, v'tova yirecho tchelos tzitziso. And you can do it, you can go ahead and you can spin tchelos for your tzitzis. Okay, so this brings us to a really controversial topic. Okay, huge controversy, which is that in the Mishnah we learned that to write to sell, that you can't do. However, to write for yourself tefillin and mezuzah, so that you can do, on Chol HaMoed, because it's a mitzvah. Now, by mezuzah, yes, of course it's a mitzvah, meaning you have a house, you have a mezuzah, you have a need to put a mezuzah over there, and so, good. So I understand the writing of mezuzahs. What about tefillin? So you're writing up the tefillin for yourself for Chol HaMoed, because you're putting them on Chol HaMoed? So we get to one of the most classic and one of the biggest debates that has occurred now for centuries, and that is is the Chol HaMoed the right time to put on tefillin? Meaning Shabbos we don't put on tefillin, Yantav we don't put on tefillin. What about Chol HaMoed? So is there a requirement to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed? The question can be formulated, is it mutter to put tefillin on Chol HaMoed? And then we can just amp up the question just a little bit more. Is it a mitzvah to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed? So if we had our Mishnah, one could make the argument, the answer would be yes. Why? Because the Mishnah says that one is allowed to write tefillin in order to fulfill the mitzvah of now. Presumably, what that means is, the simplest way to understand the Mishnah, is that it's a mitzvah to go ahead and to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. You could say that as a pshat. Fine. But I'm just dealing meat and potatoes right now. Is there a mitzvah to put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed? And really what it comes down to is Chol HaMoed. Is that really just an extension of Yantiv? Or is Chol HaMoed, in other words, you have the two bookends of Yantiv, but that which in the middle is a little bit more chol than it is moed. Okay, so that's a gross oversimplification, but basically, is it appropriate to put tefillin on Chol HaMoed? So this is, as we know, it's a major debate. So the Beis Yosef writes that in no uncertain terms that Chol HaMoed is not the appropriate time for tefillin. Without getting into a really large topic and a really large discussion, but our Mishnah over here and our Gemara's discussion is certainly fuel for this discussion. And the Beis Yosef writes that no. In other words, Chol HaMoed, you do not put tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Anshei Sfard, every variation of Anshei Sfard, do not put tefillin on Chol HaMoed. The Beis Yosef's position, the Shulchan Aruch's position, could not be any clearer. Meanwhile, the Balei Tosfos, right over here, Tosfos right here, Rabbi Yossi Omer, right? You're going to see the discussion right here in this Tosfos. And the Ashkenazim are a little bit more segregated, segmented, in terms of this discussion of whether or not you should or should not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So again, without getting into a lengthier discussion, so do the Ashkenazim put on tefillin or not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed? So if you've ever visited an Ashkenaz shul on Chol HaMoed, so you know the answer is machlokas, a major debate. Generally speaking, Chassidim do not, right? No way, no. The Chassidim do not. And then it's just a question of variation. In Eretz Yisrael, one more thing I can add to this discussion for now, this is a really, I'm giving a very broad stroke discussion. In Eretz Yisrael, come out, nobody puts on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, not Sfardim, for sure not Sfardim, and even the Ashkenazim, no. And my assumption is, and I think I'm right about this, is that it's a function of the Gra, meaning that the Gra was against the idea of putting on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. A lot of the Menhagim in Eretz Yisrael follow the Gra. Most of the Ashkenazic Menhagim follow the Gra. And so therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, so you people do not put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay. Anyway.
What about, since we don't put on tefillin, can tefillin be repaired?
Oh, good. So, right. So, thank you. Okay. And then, if you are of the position, which is most of the Jewish people, right? A lot of Jews put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, but, right, all Sfardim do not, all Chassidim do not, and Eretz Yisrael they do not. So then how are they learning our Mishnah? Meaning when our Mishnah says that what you could do is that you can write up the tefillin for yourself on Chol HaMoed, so how are you learning the Mishnah? So there are a lot of ways.
So that you should have it right.
Oh, okay, good. So the Ritva writes, So they write an easy way to say it, and the Ritva writes like this, is that the way to learn the Mishnah is that, look, right, tefillin, you can't just simply wake up one day and say, hey, I'm going to prepare for myself a pair of tefillin. It takes time. It takes time to write. It takes time for the bat. It takes time. So the easiest way to understand the Mishnah is that you're preparing them on Chol HaMoed for right after Chol HaMoed. Right. That would be the way to understand the Mishnah. It is a little bit challenging because, as we know, what are the heterim on Chol HaMoed? So the heterim on Chol HaMoed is that I can do malachas on Chol HaMoed, litzorech HaMoed. Over here, it's not litzorech HaMoed. Okay, but it's litzorech mitzvah. Okay, so anyway, For, as far as Daf Yomi is concerned, I spent too much time on that topic. Okay. Good. Okay. Let's move on. We're on Yud Tes Amud Aleph. We're starting with the Gemara. So the Gemara starts off Tanu Rabbanan Kosev Adam Tefillin Mezuzas La'atzmo. So the Brice over here is going to go over the various positions regarding writing. So according to the Tanakama, which we'll see in just a moment, is Rabbi Meir. So a person can write tefillin and mezuzah for himself, and in terms of spinning tchelas for his tzitzis, he could do so for himself. And you could do it for other people, but without getting paid. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ma'arim u'mocheh shalom v'chos v'kosav la'atzmo. So Rabbi Yehuda allows harama, meaning that you could do it for yourself, but with the full understanding that you're not really doing it for yourself, you're doing it to sell to others. Okay, and Rabbi Yossi Amar Kosov Amoche Kedarko Kedei Parnasoso. And Rabbi Yossi says that you can go ahead and you can write and sell, and you don't have to use Harama, and like you normally would. So Orilei Rav Le Rav Chanan of Amrilei Rav Abarachan Le Rav Chanan Halacha Kosov Amoche Kedarko Kedei Parnasoso. And the Gemara says that's the halacha, that you're allowed to write and you're allowed to sell. Kedarko, meaning the shita of Rabbi Yossi is the accepted shita, Lefi Maskanasa Gemara. Continuing. V'tova yirecho tchelos, spinning the tchelos for your tzitzis. So Tanu Rabbanan tova adam al yirecho tchelos tzitzis av alo be'evan div Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar says you're allowed to spin, but you have to do it with a shinui. Sometimes the spinning is done with a stone. Now you're wondering, what does that mean? That's a great question. Ask somebody who knows what that means. what that means. What I imagine is that the stone is serving as some sort of weight. But again, though, we're in an arena that I know very little about. Anyway, but it's with a shinui. That I can tell you for sure. V'chachamim omrim, af be'ev. And the chachamim will tell you, you could use a stone, meaning spin it with using the weight. And Rabbi Yehuda omer, mishmo be'evin avalo b'plach. You could use a stone, but you can't use a plach. The plach is the tool that was used back in the day for spinning. You can't use that. V'chachamim omrim, be'im be'evin, be'im b'plach. And the chachamim say, you could use a stone, you could use a plach. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, v'chein, I'm Rav Chiya bar Abba, I'm Rav Yochanan, halacha bein be'evin, bein b'plach, v'halacha kosef kedarko mocher kedei parnasaso. You could spin your tchelis like you normally would, bein be'evin, bein b'plach, and kosef kedarko mocher kedei parnasaso. Not sure why the Gemara repeated that. We already conclude that just a couple moments earlier. But anyway, but you can write tefillin mezuzahs. You can sell them kedarko, and you don't have to use any kind of harama. Okay. Just taking a small pause, a breath. I'm out of coffee. Okay. I'm good. I appreciate it. Okay. We are on Yotzei Amud Aleph. We are halfway down the Amud, and this is it. This is now going to be the point of transition here for the remainder of the Masechta, remainder of the Perek, remainder of the Masechta, in which we're going to be talking about the Halachas of Avelos. Now, why is Avelos coming up over here? So, I'll give you a simple reason. That is that there are a lot of similarities, I know it sounds funny, between Avelos and Chol HaMoed. Okay? I'm such an Ashkenaz, it's unbelievable. But the similarities are, is that for a week, there's an Isra Malacha for a week. Now granted, by the way, they are coming from two totally different emotions, meaning one has to do with Simcha, and the other one, of course, has to do with Avel and loss. But nevertheless, in other words, there are common denominators between the two, and we spent a lot of time, and we're going to start doing so also here as well, in terms of discussing intersection, meaning what happens when Avelos and Chol HaMoed intersect with one another. And by Chol HaMoed, I really mean Yontif, as will become clear in the beginning of our discussion. What happens when you're observing Avelos, you're observing Shloshim, and then along comes Yontif? What happens when the two intersect? Now you're thinking to yourself, didn't we discuss that already? The answer, of course, is yes. But here we're going to be discussing it much more formally, and on top of that, this is going to be the launching pad, the springboard for a discussion of all the halachas of Avelos, right? The remaining section of Gemara here in this parak is going to be focused on and principally on all the observances during Avelos. Let's start with the Mishnah. Before we start, so just one more word of introduction. We already discussed this before, but let's make this point clear. So after the burial, so upon return from the cemetery, so you're starting your Avelos. The truth of the matter is, once you start walking away from the cemetery at that point in time, Avelos has already now begun. And Avelos is for 7 days. For those 7 days, there are a number of Nihugim. Now we can actually quantify, because we already discussed this earlier in the Masechta. 13 Nihugim in total. 10 Isurim, 3 Chiyuvim. So go back to the Gemaras that we saw just a short couple of days ago, in which the Gemara articulated every one of them, gave a source for every one of them. So for those 7 days, the observances of Avelos are going to be those 13 practices. That's for the Shiva. Then after that, there's what's called Shloshim. Shloshim is now going to be for the next 30 days. Now the 30 days afterwards, the observances of Avelos tapers off significantly. There's going to be much less Isurim that are involved during Shloshim. Shloshim principally is going to be highlighted by an Isur of Tasparos. You're not allowed to get a haircut during Shloshim. And including that, it also is going to be shaving. And on top of that, there's also still going to be some iser of what the Gemara is going to describe as gihuts, which is a form of laundry. Okay, but outside of that, all the other practices of Shiva are going to fall away, and those are the remaining practices during Shloshim. For one's mother and one's father, there's what's called Yud Beis Chodesh, but we are not focusing on that yet. That comes up later in our parak. We'll talk about that later. What we already know, which we're going to be discussing now in more detail, is that what happens when Yontif comes along. So Yontif is going to be Mevatel Shiva. Yontif is going to be Mevatel Shloshim. But not both. Meaning that if, let's say, Shiva goes into Yontif, you're in the middle of Shiva, and Yontif comes along, so Yontif breaks the Shiva, but that still leaves you with Shloshim. And what happens when you're observing Shloshim and Yontif comes along? Yontif is going to be Mevatel Shloshim. Okay? So that is the basic idea, and now we go to the details. We are in the Mishnah. We're on Yotzei Amud Aleph. We're halfway down the Amud. Kover es meso. So you bury your mace. Shlosha yamim kodem l'regel, So as long as you observe 3 days of Avelus, so the rest of Avelus now is going to be Nisbato. It will be knocked out. Shmona, now let's say you observed 8 days, which of course means that you finish your Shiva, and now you're in Shloshim. Now, I made this point already earlier, but let's make it again because it's a good clarification point. And that is that you're starting your Shloshim count with your Shiva count. I mean, after the Kvura, so you start counting Shiva, you're also counting Shloshim as well. So, but the reason why we call it Shiva and Shloshim is because categorically they're different. And even though once you observe Shiva, you already observe 7 of your 30 days of Shloshim. Okay, but still, we always describe them as Shiva and Shloshim, even though they're overlapping in terms of being counted together. So let's say now you observed 8 days prior to Yontif, meaning that you're in your 8th day as Yontif now is approaching. So now, obviously, Shiva is completed. And now what does the 8th day represent? It represents the 1st day of your Shloshim. And again, I say 1st day of Shloshim, I don't mean day 1 of Shloshim, but I mean day 1 of category Shloshim. Okay. So under those circumstances, now Yontif is going to be Mevato. What is Yontif being Mevato? So that's right. Yontif is being Mevato your Shloshim. But Lohem and Exer Shloshim, Mimnesha Amru. Shabbos Olaveinu Mafsekes. Now, what happens when Shabbos interrupts Avelos? Now, interruption is the wrong word because it's not going to interrupt it. It means that Shabbos is just simply part of your Avelos. Now, it happens to be every Avelos is going to have a Shabbos with it because Avelos, by definition, is a week. A week is all 7 days. And regardless of when it starts, there's always going to be a Shabbos included in it. So Shabbos is Ole, it counts as one of the 7 days, and Eino Mafsekes, it's not going to interrupt your Shiva. However, Regala Mafsekin, Ve'enon Olin, so Regal will interrupt, it'll be Mafsek, and it doesn't count. Now the language of the Mishnah seems to be a little bit redundant. It's going to interrupt and it's not going to count. Once it's interrupted, of course it's not going to count. So what does that mean? So the way Rashi understands it is as follows. So Mafsik means that if you started your Avelos before Yontif, so Yontif will just simply cut it off, meaning that's it. Avelos is over. Either whether it be Shiva or whether it be Shloshim. As far as now Eina Ola, that means let's say, Rachmanus, you become an Avel during Yontif. So if you become an Avel during Yontif, so what happens now? So you didn't have Yontif knocking out your Shiva or your Shloshim, but even though there are many days before Yontif is coming to an end, you have not started your Avelos. Avelos does not start until after Yontif. So under those circumstances, that's what the Mishnah means when it says Eino Ole. It means now that there will be a suspension of even the beginning of your Avelos until after Yontif. Later we're going to be discussing, later in this part, we'll talk about Yontif Sheni. In other words, do you start your Avelos after Yontif Sheni or do you start your Avelos even on Yontif Sheni itself? Stay tuned, we will discuss that a little bit later on. It's not stronger, but in other words, just sharpen your question a little bit.
No, because you have to be more careful on Yontif.
It's not stronger. It's just that Yontif has a different interaction with Avelos than Shabbos does, right? Right. Right. So right, and it's a function. Right, and the easiest way to say it is that Yontif is a function of Simcha, meaning what it sounds like from Magamar pretty clearly is that there's no simcha on Shabbos. Okay, now I talk about something to chew on and really think about. No, I'm being totally serious. Meaning, right, Shabbos is not highlighted by simcha. Okay, right, that's a lot to think about, but that's basically what the Gemara is saying. Now, at this point in time, hopefully you're wondering, because our Mishnah says that when is Yontif going to break your Avelos, your Shiva? That's if you observe 3 days of your Avelos, then and only then Yontif is going to go ahead and break your Shiva. Is that right? Well, that's certainly what the Mishnah says. So we're going to see together the halacha is no. The halacha is that you observe any amount of your Shiva and Yontif is going to go ahead and break it. So why does the Mishnah give the example of 3 days of Shiva? So stay tuned. That's coming up a little bit later on. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Mishachar Beis HaMikdash Atzeres K'Shabbos. Rabbi Elazar says, once the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so Shavuos is going to be like Shabbos in that Shavuos is not going to knock out your Avelos. And Rosh Hashanah says that Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah are going to be like a Yontif. And the Chachamim say no and no. But rather, Ella, Atzeres Kiragalem, Shavuos is like a Yantiv. It's just the regular way that Sukkot and Pesach is going to interact with Avelos. Shavuos, same thing. And Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Kishabbos. And Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are going to be like Shabbos. And we will discuss that more of that a little bit later on. Anyway, let's turn our attention to the Gemara. I don't want to fall too far behind. Amar Rav Gzeres Batlu Yamim. I'm sorry, Gzeres Batlu Yamim Lo Batlu. V'chein Amar Rav Huna Gzeres Batlu Yamim Lo Batlu. What exactly is the interaction when Yantav and Avelis collide? So the simplest way to read the Mishnah, and the way I presented the Mishnah, is that what's going to happen is that it knocks it out. In other words, that's what the word Mivatal means. Meanwhile, two Amarim, both Rav and Rav Huna, Rav Huna Tamid Rav, say no. That's not the way to understand the Mishnah. The correct way to understand the Mishnah is that Gzera Bitlu. That the only thing that happens is that the observances themselves are going to be knocked out, but Yamim Lo Bitlu, but not the days. Meaning the days are going to continue and perpetuate. Now, what is he talking about? He's talking about Shiva. That's really hard to imagine. Meaning, as long as you started your Avelos before Yontif, so then, in other words, whatever days are remaining are gonna be done with by the end of Yontif. So presumably, what he's referring to over here is Shloshim. Now, Shloshim, obviously, the simplest way to read the Mishnah is that you start Shloshim prior to Yontif. In other words, the Mishnah's example, you were on day 8 from the Kvura, and then you're now hitting Yontif. So the simple way to read the Mishnah is, that's it. No more Shloshim. Shloshim gets totally knocked out. The practice of Shloshim gets knocked out. The whole count of Shloshim gets knocked out. So the way Rav and Rav Huna are interpreting the Mishnah is no. In other words, what's going to happen now is that over the course of Yontiv, you don't have to observe the Nihugim of Shloshim, but once Yontiv is over, you resume. That's the way they're saying the Mishnah. V'chein am Rav Huna gzeres bedlo yamim lo bedlo. Rav Sheshes amar, afilo yamim nami bedlo. So, and Rav Sheshes says, no, that's not the way to understand the Mishnah. The way to understand the Mishnah is it totally knocks it out. My time, a yamim lo bitlu, shim lo gilech, erev haregel, also lo galeach, achar haregel. And as far as an explanation of Rav and Rav Huna, where yamim lo bitlu, what that means is that if you didn't take advantage and shave and get a haircut prior to Yantiv, which you did have the right and the ability to do, again, we're talking about where Shloshim got knocked out. And if you didn't take advantage of it before, also like acharegel, you cannot do so acharegel after Yontif, according to Rav and according to Rav Huna. Continuing vehatanya, and the Gemara now is going to be quoting a brisa that is supportive of this idea, supportive to Rav and supportive of Rav Huna. The brisa starts off on your testament base. Hakovers meso shoshiyamim kodem laregel. So burial was 3 days before Yontif. But la heimenu gzira shiva. So Yontif is going to knock out Shiva. Shmona yamim kodem laregel bat la heimenu gzira shloshim. And now let's say it was 8 days prior to Yontif. So Yontif now is going to knock out what we call shloshim. Umegaleach ever erev regel. You shave before Yontif. Im lo gilech erev regel. Also legaleach achar haregel. And if you don't shave prior to Yontif, so you cannot shave after Yontif. This shita of the Tanakama is in alignment with the shita of Rav and the shita of Rav Huna, which is that if you didn't help yourself to shaving before Yontif, so that means to say that Shloshim will continue and perpetuate after Yontif. Abishal Omer, Mutar Legalech Achar Regel. And Abishal says, no, you're allowed to shave after Yontif, even if you didn't shave before Yontif. Shekashim, Shemitzah Shloshim Avatel Gzera Shiva, Kach Mitzvah Shiva Mevatel Gzera Shloshim, because according to Abishal, Yontif knocks things out totally. It knocks out Shiva totally, it knocks out Shloshim totally. So Shiva Vanan Shmona Tanan. Now the Gemara says over here, we're a little bit confused, because Abishal says that Mitzvah Shiva Mevateles Gzera Shloshim. So the Gemara says, that line of Abishal, what does it mean, mitzvah shiva? Didn't our Mishnah say shmona? Meaning, when does Shloshim get knocked out? So according to our Mishnah, you already have to be in day 8, meaning 7 days have already been observed, and now you're in day 8, which now means you're starting Shloshim. So then, Yontif is going to knock out Shloshim. But if you only observe 7 days, so in the Brisa we just learned together, according to Abishal, so 7 days and it's knocking out Shloshim, the Gemara says, yeah, that's right. Kasavar Abishal. Now, hopefully you remember, because we already discussed this earlier in the Masechta, but here the Gemara is saying it now formally. Kasavar Abishal, Mitzas Ayom Kikulo, Yom Ashiya Ola Lakan Lakan. So Abishal is of the position of Mitzas Ayom Kikulo, which means that once you start the seventh day, so already at the beginning of the morning of the seventh day, once the Menachemim have now walked out, once our minhag is once, all right, the conclusion of Shacharis, so and the Menachemim walk out, so that's it. Shiva now has come to a conclusion. What's the remainder? What's the balance of the seventh day according to Abishal? Shloshim. That's when you begin Shloshim. So that means now that according to Abishal, if the seventh day is Erev Yantav, so now what does that mean? Shiva's done. You already started observing Shloshim. That's Mitzvah Sayom. Ola Lakan Ulakan. It both signifies, that seventh day signifies the end of Shiva and the beginning of Shloshim. And now Yantav is Mevatel Shloshim. That's the Shita of Abishal. So really, the truth of the matter is, encoded within Abishal, you have really two kulas. One is the basic idea that Yontav is Mevato Shloshim. Not like Rav, not like Rav Huna, not like the Tanakama, where they're of the position that if I didn't shave and get a haircut prior to Yontav, that's it. Shloshim will continue to perpetuate after Yontav. Abishal disagrees with that point. And Abishal also has a tremendous, tremendous kula, in that on day number seven, so already Shiva has come to an end at the beginning of day number seven. I say the beginning of the morning, and the remainder of day number seven is treated like Shloshim. And therefore, Ola Lakan Ulakan, Yantiv is now going to break Shloshim under those circumstances. Amr of Chisam Ravina Barshila Halacha Kabashal. So the Gemara says that the Halach is in fact like Abishal. Modim Chacham al Abishal. Kishachal Shmini Shalom. Lios Bishabis Erev Rego. Mutala Galech Be'er Shabbos. And then a comment that we saw earlier is that despite the fact that the Chachamim disagree with Abishal, and look, we passen like Abishal, but still, just from a Svara standpoint, the Chachamim would agree in the following scenario. Where let's say Shabbos is not, the Yontif is not on Shabbos, Yontif is on a Sunday, and it happens to be that right now you are, for that Shabbos, in your eighth day of observance. So then, according to the Chachamim, what you could do is you could shave and get a haircut on Friday. Friday is your seventh day, and the Chachamim don't agree in principle to the idea of Mitzvah Sayom Kekulo. In that circumstance, and only in that circumstance, the Chachamim would agree with Abishal. Knowing that there's an eighth day, it's just that the eighth day you will be inhibited from shaving because it's Shabbos. So under that circumstance, so they're going to be Mako. In that regard. Keman Azlaha, Damarav, Amarav, Avel. Kevin Shamdu Menachmim Me'atzlo, Mutter Berechitza. Once the Avelim leave on the morning of the seventh day, so he's allowed to bathe, meaning Shiva is now over. So come on, Kabashal. So that goes like the Shita of Abishal. Amar Rabbi Halacha Kabashal b'yom Shiva. So the Halacha is like Abishal on day seven. Modim Chacham l'Abishal b'yom Shloshim. Now, even though Abishal and the Chachamim argue about Mitzvah Yom Kekulo, for Shiva, for Shloshim, Leis Manda Palak, there's no argument. And we'll conclude with this today. Darmina Mitzvah Yom Kekulo. That is on Shloshim, so everyone agrees. Mitzvah Yom Kekulo on the morning of the 30th. So all the nihugim of Shloshim are lifted. Rava Amar Halacha Kabashal b'Yom Shloshim ve'ein Halacha Kabashal b'Yom Shiva. Rava is of the position that Halacha is like Kabashal on the 30th day, not for Shiva. Now Dai Amri Halacha Kabashal b'Zu v'Zu Damashmo Halacha Divrei Ameko be'Avel. And Nahardai is of the position that know that the halacha is like Abishal both for Shiva and for Shloshim. And Shmuel says, this is now the second time in our Masechta we heard this, that the halacha is Kedivrei HaMeikel when it comes to Avelus. So over here, Abishal obviously represents a kula. We hold like Abishal both for Shiva and for Shloshim as well. Okay, Adkan.